tapping. No. It was like being in a rainstorm. It was so loud. If I was a music presenter, I would just end up feel like I'm doing a less cool job.
Hi, I'm Erin Velak, and I've made it my mission to interview the members of the University of Nottingham's student radio station, URN. Join me to uncover how our members got into student radio, what they're listening to in their free time, and their most iconic pieces of clothing that might make you recognise them as you're walking around campus. I want to know who they are when the mics aren't live, so let's find out. This is Off Air with URN. So we have Mark on the show today. Mark is part of the tech team, is an After Darker, and obviously part of News. Can't forget that.
Don't forget News.
Don't forget News. So welcome, Mark. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Let's start with the easiest place to start, which is joining student radio. Why did you join URN? How did that story go?
Well, that's an interesting one, and I think a question that needs to be answered by going a little further back. And that is sort of, I've been doing kind of radio in some form since I was probably, let me think, it was going to be probably late 2018. My school was very kind of privileged. I was very privileged at school to have a kind of school radio that's been going since 2008. I say radio kind of loosely. It's kind of just speakers that are around school and, you know, a room at the top that we can like play music and talk from. So I kind of fell into that because it seemed quite interesting, and I kind of did that for a few years. Obviously COVID got in the way for a bit, but I really did enjoy that, and it was a kind of a shame to see it go. And I was sort of aware of student radio for a few years before coming to Nottingham. So when I left my school radio, doing student radio was certainly something on the cards. And in fact, there's kind of a recording in my last ever show on school radio where I sort of jokingly make reference to URN and say, you know, who knows, University Radio Nottingham, here I come, or something like that. But at that point, I wasn't really sure if I was, you know, going to do it. Because on Fresh This Week, I was like, you know, who knows, there's so many things to do at university. Maybe my time at sixth form coming to an end has sort of marked some natural end to my, I don't know, love affair with media stuff. But kind of, I went to the stand at Freshers' Fair. I was in a bit of a rush that day, so it was quite it was quite a fleeting glimpse. I didn't really speak to anybody. I kind of picked up a leaflet. But kind of weirdly, like almost subconsciously, I just felt a kind of a draw to it, as if it kind of just felt right, you know. I started off quite casually. I think I emailed like the get involved at urn1350.net email address and said, you know, saw the stand at Freshers' Fair, what's the next, you know, steps if I want to do more. And I got told about the open studio, so I got toured around the studio by Jack, and then I went to the welcome meeting, and kind of that's how I got started, and kind of ever since then the amount that I've been doing is just kind of increasing. Started off quite casual, and now it's sort of my main commitment outside my degree. Well, probably my main commitment, full stop.
Yeah.
which I think is a common thing amongst previous interviewees.
Yeah. No, radio is definitely a society that, because you're doing something.
Yeah.
And you have almost a weekly commitment. It's very easy to get very sort of wrapped up in it and to do a lot of it, which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah, and kind of having the office as a place. A lot of my time in first term was still a lot of online teaching. So in terms of socialisation, there wasn't loads. Especially when it came to course mates. So coming into the office more regularly, where I could, you know, get work done in inverted commas, but still like interact with others, was kind of seemed like a good thing to do, to get my fix of like people just outside of my halls of residence, or just getting outside my room, full stop, really.
Yeah. You mentioned that you did it at school, which I think you're the first person I've spoken to that their school had a radio.
Yeah.
I think my school do now. I know that because my mum does it, because she's got me to.
Oh, that's
It's
really cool.
Not the system we use. I have no idea how it works. But she's like, Erin, can you come teach me how this works? I'm like, So I spend time figuring out how it works. And then I write her a list of like how to do it. But I don't actually know how it works. So that's a... They kind of had it a little bit for the... I think they had it for the lower school. So my school like had all the... You could do from 3 to 18 sort of thing. So, but they had it for the younger years. But it was never an option for me. So it's really interesting that that was what you had at school. Were you doing a lot of more like daytime stuff? Was it like during your lunch breaks? How did that work at school?
Yeah, so generally the way it operated was there was kind of basically each day would be allocated to a show or some people, and it was kind of like a weekly thing. Radio shows were presented before school started, so like up until like the first bell, so when people were kind of coming in and socializing before they went off to mentor time or whatever, and also at break time. It wasn't, we never did it a lot. I may have previously done it at lunchtime, but our school operated, because we were quite a big school, and like the amount of eating facilities there were, kind of was mandated the need to have two lunch breaks, an early lunch and a late lunch, meaning that if you were, you know, trying to present radio during lunchtime hours, wouldn't really make sense, because even if presenters' lunch breaks did line up, you would still probably be distracting people in lessons, because, you know, there'll be speakers around school still going off whilst people are in class. So it was like, in terms of like actual time, there was like 15, 20 minutes in like before school, 15, 20 minutes, like at break. And it was very much it didn't really fit into a particular category. A lot of it was kind of playing a lot of music. So, with kind of links that were only really 2-3 minutes, you know, talking, there'd be like a show concept, but then there'd also be obligations of like making announcements, like what's going on in school and things like that, which I don't know if anyone actually really heard it.
I was gonna say, were people listening to the radio?
Well, that's the thing, nobody, it was one of those things that was very, very very unavoidable if you were in certain places of school, and if like, and we had control of how high up the speakers were, how loud they were around school. So, you know, realistically, if you really wanted someone to listen to, you could probably, you know, I guess you could push the speakers and like make yourself really loud, but like, you know, there's teachers
people
around.
People probably aware of it, even just
people are aware of it, but I think over time they just like, people learn to tune it out. So like, I do remember a lot of the time sort of doing some like radio discussions, or like even putting some songs on, and I'd sort of come and I'd go to like my first lesson or the lesson after break, and I'd ask people, oh, do you hear? And then they'd be like, no. They really didn't particularly like there wasn't really much active listenership, aside from like the odd teacher who might be on duty and listen to a song that they quite like, and then like let you know, oh, did you play that song? I really liked it. So in terms of actual, like, I don't know, like encouragement, that's where most of it came from.
That's that feels very much like still uni radio. It's very much,
yes,
you don't get a lot of active listeners, but that's because almost, why would you? It's very specific to what we're doing right now.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of doing school radio then, is kind of I'm used to not expect, I'm kind of, my bar's quite low in terms of listenership. I'm used to like people just not even like, I don't know, knowing that I was on or like what stuff I played. So even if I have like 4 or 5 people tune in now and you know message in or comment on the music that I'm playing, then like that's enough for me.
It's a big
win.
No, even I think it's my parents and Gabby's parents listen to Eco Frenzy, and that's a big win if we get both the parents listening.
Yeah, like the parent, especially with having currently my show is like on here outside, my After Dark show is like 7 till 9 a.m. So like the parent demographic is really important, because like there's no, because at least for the first hour, there's no way you're getting the student demographic from 7 till 8 a.m.
No, there is no way you're getting me up that early unless I have volleyball or I have lectures.
Yeah, so the sort of parent and family demographic is an important one to get inside. My mum listens to The Pulse every week as well.
Oh, that's very
and
sweet.
My grandparents as well. They're big fans. It's quite nice. So I'm sort of hoping to maintain that going forward as well.
So how Or maybe a better question is why? How did you fall into doing the Pulse first of all, or why did you choose to join the Pulse?
That's an interesting one. So, as I said, coming from a radio show, especially in my last kind of time in year 13, in sixth form, my show was very musicy, very after dark, very specialist music. It was kind of very similar to the format that I currently do, but a bit kind of watered down and a bit kind of much more smaller scale. So my first instinct really was to do an after dark show, do a music show. I was like, that seems cool. And then because it's first term and, you know, busy and didn't really know what to do, you had to submit a demo and stuff like that. And whilst I felt probably confident enough to do it, it felt like quite a lot of hassle, quite a lot of hoops to jump through. And realistically, it wasn't, but at the time, it felt like more.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot going on. And
exactly.
It's tricky to do that.
Because I didn't know at that point really how much of a time of my time as a student would be spent doing radio. Like, you know, it could be just some small side gig. I didn't know if it was only first 2 weeks. I could have been doing endless other societies on the side as well, but I didn't know that then. And that was combined with the fact on welcome meeting, I starkly remember, I think some people were locked out or something. So by the time that Ben Meller came in, for those not in the know, Ben Meller's head of news here at Radio, and somewhat unprepared, just delivered this kind of I wouldn't say like inspiring, but it was certainly a kind of this speech about trying to get people into news certainly struck a chord with me, and it seemed interesting, and I also knew that there was, you know, moving to do, you know, computer science full time as my degree meant that I was kind of giving up quite a lot of the more, I don't know, humanities, more the kind of, there's a side of my hobbies that kind of involved politics and current affairs and things that would almost get neglected academically.
Did you do politics at A level?
I didn't. I don't think they didn't offer it for our year groups. No one wanted to do it. But it was always something I was quite interested in, and therefore, you know, it was also something new. And so all of those things combined kind of made me think, well, maybe I'll do that. On top of the fact that the Pulse was quite an easy thing to get onto,
in
the fact that I put my name down, I said what days I could do. Ben put me on the Tuesday Pulse at that time with Thomas and Daniel and Callum Thomas as well, so incoming head of sport. And it was just really nice to just talk. It was relaxing. It was fairly laid back. And I think the Tuesday Pulse last term was quite consistent. It was kind of in terms of its output. I don't think we ever missed a show except Reading Week, maybe. And I really enjoyed doing that, and it felt like quite instinctive. And then I think on one of the last shows of the term before Christmas, Thomas, who was hosting it, couldn't make it. So I said I'm happy to step in and host. So I did that, and I really enjoyed that. So for this semester, I've now moved to hosting the Pulse. And as I said, that just got me into the Pulse and all things news. And I think even now, whilst I do quite a lot of stuff around the station, I still internally consider myself kind of a news person at heart.
First and foremost, news.
Yeah.
Are you planning on doing it again next year?
Certainly, yes. I think it's really weird in the sense that a lot of people are surprised when I say how much I really do enjoy hosting the Pulse. Some people might find it a bit of a slog at times, or like not that exciting to people that aren't particularly into kind of current affairs and news and things. But whilst I kind of enjoy doing a 2-hour After Dark show, and I can like flex my musical muscle if it exists, you know, in inverted commas there. I just like the 1-hour. Like time slot of doing the Pulse. It's quite, I can really enjoy it, and it doesn't take loads of my brain power. I feel like I'm quite naturally inclined to it, and I can, you know, talk about like something I'm interested in with other people that generally are better informed than I am, so I can like learn stuff, and then you can take, you know, on the surface it's just some news show, but you can you can like add lots of different things, and I've been realizing over the past term that you can add like lots of interesting things that make that keep people engaged, whether or not it's going around or doing the Vox Pop stuff, asking students what they think about cats getting ran over or what they like to read or kind of random stuff like that, and like funny topics and things like that, and it can be really like a fun like bonding social experience. So I really really want to keep doing it next year, and I think it will still be like my main commitment, which, as I said, like is considered odd by some, but it's I don't know, it's just fun.
Yeah, well, if it's what you enjoy, then is what you enjoy. Would you, if you had to pick between your After Dark show and the Pulse, would you pick the Pulse, or is is that a Sophie's Choice kind of situation?
I think I still view don't tell anyone I said this. Maybe it's because I'm still quite early on with it.
Mm-hmm.
But my current After Dark show, The Twilight Zone, it's very good. I enjoy making it. It's still very much a side gig for me. Okay. It's very much a thing that, you know, that doesn't mean I don't put effort into it. You know, effort into it and make it like nice and enjoyable to listen to. I try and give it production values with, you know, beds and custom idents and things like that, segments and social media. But even then, it's almost like I treat that as a little, like, as a fun little side project.
Yeah.
And I think the Pulse is something that is like most important to me when it comes to hosting, because it's just the most instinctive. And you know, maybe that might change with time as I kind of further learn to fill my After Dark shaped shoes, but I don't know. I guess it's just a game of waiting and seeing where it goes from here.
Yeah, no, it's definitely I currently do three different things, and they all have their turn of being my priority. They all have their turn of being, you know, the side gig or the one I'm doing a lot. Like, this is the podcast. It takes up such a big part of my life for, I'd say, a couple weeks at a time, because I try to bulk record.
Yeah.
I try to, and then I edit them. And I try and bulk edit. I never do. But that, you know, that's like a... It feels like a side thing because it doesn't have that schedule. It doesn't have that, like, constant rotation. But at the same time, it's maybe the thing I'm most passionate about, because it's the idea that was my own idea, you know. This came from my little brain. Whereas the other stuff I do, I do a daytime show. You know, as much as the segments are my ideas, the concept of a daytime show is not my idea at all.
I think that might also play into part of my thinking when it comes to The Twilight Zone as well, actually. As I said, on a format level, it's not too dissimilar from what I used to do, which is quite amusing. I spent like a semester and, you know, a good... more than a semester putting off applying for an After Dark show, because I was like, oh, I haven't come up with a good idea yet. No, I want to come up with something original. And I hit like February or March, and I just got fed up, and I was just like, no, actually, let's do this idea. It's pretty good. You know, no one else seems to do it. And like, who cares if I used to do it in some format back in the day? Like, this is almost... And now instead, I'm kind of... Whilst I'm treating it as its... own thing, almost like the bigger brother, or what I always wanted my old thing to be, now, you know, scaled up with the smoothness that you know, the tech and the opportunity student radio can do compared to school. But as I said, it almost does feel like a bit of a continuation, whereas other stuff feels like, you know, feels kind of unique to me, because I know loads of After Dark shows that play kind of some, you know, music that I'm interested in, and kind of what I do isn't particularly groundbreaking by any means, but, you know, I enjoy it, whereas at least I can say that my contributions to tech or hopefully news are somewhat, I've got the stamp of me on them more prominently. I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess actually it is always worth just... You don't need to have a new idea. You can...
Yeah.
I find that it's so much easier to just get started with whatever it is you're doing, and then you almost learn what the new idea should be, and learn how to do it a lot, and maybe differently.
I agree. I mean, as I said, that was what my semester and a half was spent doing, basically just realizing actually it's fine to use that idea. And naturally, like... I think I've only done four shows, because I've taken a break because of exam season.
Yeah.
So I need, and in the four shows that I did, you know, the format is kind of not drastically changed, but there's a lot that's different from the show one to show four. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of quick, rapid development when it comes to putting new formats in, or like how you structure the show and how kind of just your mindset going in of picking what songs you do. And, you know, because when someone's, a lot of the time when someone starts a show or a format, when, you know, that they have plenty of ideas, you know, they have a certain vision for it, and then you get a few shows in and you sort of realize in my case, sort of, I realized that actually my original idea wasn't sustainable in the long run.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the trickiest things about doing a radio show, even like like 3 years here in comparison to my, how like some 7 years that some people spent doing school radio. But my old school, I started quite late. But some did it from like year 7 till 6th form. Like 3 years is shorter compared to then, but like but the slots are massively bigger.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more to fill. So having a long running like specialist music show is quite tricky. And I think next year's primary challenges is going to be making that work.
Are you thinking of changing up the format at all for your After Dark show? Or do you think you're quite happy kind of with the, I guess, at least the bare bones of it?
I'm quite happy with the ideas and concepts behind it currently. I think currently the fact that I've got a morning show has made the format different to if it's going to be on in the evening. I did a kind of a special impromptu show, like from my home in Easter holidays, because I just wanted to challenge myself. And that was in the evening, and therefore the music was very different. There's a lot of stuff in my taste that I wouldn't really... I feel like I have a duty of care to the listeners to not, you know, when you're waking up, you don't want to be listening to some stupid, long, abrasive piece of music, really. So I try that, you know, there still might be the odd one, but I like to keep a mix. I think maybe next year, if the time slot changes, it may naturally mutate into something a bit different musically, just because of the... And also, the presenting style currently is quite energetic, which is weird. It doesn't really fit with the music. A lot of the time I'm playing quite weird music, and then then the time comes for a link, and then I start presenting like a daytime host, which basically is just an attempt to overcompensate for my like immense tiredness of being up at that hour. I need to sort of keep myself awake by really kind of going for it in the energy.
How do you keep yourself awake during the show? Because you are up so early, because your show is, I don't know if we've said this, 7 to 9 a.m. How do you find, firstly, waking yourself up? Like, are you having breakfast beforehand? What's the sort of routine like, and how do you keep yourself going throughout the show?
Well, I'm quite lucky in the sense that, first of all, like this year I'm living on campus, so I can wake up realistically. Like, I wake up at 6:15, leave my accommodation at like 6:30, and then it's only really a like 6-7 minute walk into the studio. And then and that's enough time to just get ready, do a few finishing touches on the show, you know, sort of hype myself up. I don't have I do my show, and then I just, as soon as I finish, I just go back to my accommodation, have breakfast there, and then the day begins pretty much.
Oh yeah, because I guess they serve you breakfast, don't they?
Yes, so which is quite helpful in this case. So I'm able to. And said, I know some people that like wake up really, really early for their 7 to 9 a.m. and still 6:15 is still, you know, pretty early compared to what, like, it's 2 hours before I'd normally wake up. But thankfully, the advantages of living in halls this year have kind of limited the amount of sleep deprivation based damage that it can wreak on me.
I mean, I'll be honest, the Aaron and Joe show is 9 to 11. That knocks me out. I normally go for, I'm normally, it's weird because I, you know, starting the show, you get like that rush of adrenaline,
where
you're in such a good mood, and that can sustain me until about 10-ish, around 10, and then I'm like, I'm tired, coffee time, and then I'll go get a coffee, or I'll have brought a coffee with me and I'll go drink it, because I can't do the whole thing without something like that.
Yeah, as I said, I can't I can't do it without being really over enthusiastic. I'll, you know, put on some like energetic beds. Yeah. I start off with I always start my show with a bed of Blondie's Heart of Glass, which sort of, you know, is a bit of a sort of, yeah, you know, it's pumping, man. It gets you going. And
Joe and I
feel like if I don't do, if I don't keep myself energized through that, I'll just fall asleep.
Yeah.
And there's not a show that goes by that I'm like, if you're wondering why I'm so energetic, I'm really exhausted. I'm just overcompensating. But yeah, I remember actually going back to the school thing. I remember doing obviously we were only used to doing like 20 minutes in a row, 20 minutes at a time. And I remember doing a open evening before. So, you know, which lasts a whole evening, and we were asked to do radio stuff then. And it was like about 2 hours, which obviously now is not that much, you know, really. We were doing, I was doing 2 hours. I think it was also combined with the fact that we also were doing studio tours in the middle of the song break, so we were constantly interacting with people. But we were also in the speaking segments, we were always repeating the same stuff of like, you know, parents, go here, go there, go everywhere. Yeah. If you want to talk to us in radio, then we're all the way up here. You know, it was, and I remember just getting past the like first like hour and 15 minutes and I was exhausted. I was so exhausted. I think I ended up just like stopping early, letting my co-host take over and just like sitting down on the sofa in the office. I was just
having a break.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with it.
I know, I interviewed Abby at 10 and I was like, it's too early.
It's fair.
No, I have been struggling with the early mornings recently. I finished my exams on Friday and literally have just been sleeping. I know most people finish their exams and like, ooh, time to go out. I've been so exhausted from them. I have just been in a zombie state.
Going back to the issue of like the benefits and issues of catered halls is, if I want my breakfast, I need to get up at a sensible time, and my exams are finished. So as much as I'd really, really like to like sleep in until like, I don't know, like 10 every day or something, which realistically for productivity isn't the best, but like I kind of like it. It means that I'd need to sort my own breakfast. So, alas, I still woke up at 8:15 today, for my first week post-exams.
You were up earlier than I was, and I had to be dragged out of bed. I was not having
I
it
do
this
not
morning.
Envy you.
No. I think I woke up at 8:30, and I was like, I can't do this. I've just naturally been waking up about 10, and so I'm like, I just need...
Yeah.
To be fair, I slept for like 9 or 10 hours, but I was just exhausted. Anyways, have you been having exams or...?
Yes, so I had 5.
Are they over now?
They are. My last one was just on Friday. For context, this is now Monday, so it finished a few days ago, to any listeners out there.
Yeah.
I had 5. I had 3 1 week and then 2 the other. Thankfully, 3 of those 5 were on Moodle online, so... But they're all 9 a.m, so I still like to wake up for them.
Yeah, how does it work with the... Because I don't know if we've explicitly said, but you do computer science.
I do, yeah.
And in my mind, computer science should be a coursework kind of subject.
Well, it varies a lot. Yeah. So there's...
It seems like you get a good mix of everything.
Yeah, there is. So this year, there's only been one 100% exam module, and that was just this semester. That was our second Maths for Computer Scientists module.
Whereas those are all of my modules.
Yeah.
All my modules are 100% one exam.
Yeah, that's painful. Yep. Whereas there's generally it's like we've got 50-50 or like 75-25, something like that. So there's a good amount of like coursework input. Last semester there was 3 of the 4 modules were 75-25 in favour of coursework to exam, which was quite nice. I quite like that balance. I think that's like the optimal balance for me. 50-50 is a bit... I don't really like it. And I think 75% exam is a bit too much, because otherwise you spend ages and ages on like individual bits of coursework, and then you realise that actually they're barely contributing towards your overall module
grade.
Yeah,
it's such a shame.
Yeah. So... No, so as I said, 3 of 5 were online, and they were just kind of, they weren't 24-hour, they were just sort of doing the time allotted.
Was it 3-hour exams then?
We had a 3-hour one, which wasn't particularly nice, but whatever. And then others were 2, I think the other ones were 2 hours, and plus the half an hour submission time.
Ugh. That half-hour submission time
is a lovely little grace period.
The reason I've passed some of my exams, honestly.
Yeah. It was... So those were fine. And then I had one in person on the computer In Coates building. And then my last one on Friday, that was the only one this exam period that was in David Ross, which felt like a nice way to end it, really. Going to David Ross for what your last exam, finishing,
like,
and coming out into the sun, you know, exams all over, time for yes. summer girlies, you know.
Yeah. You know, I haven't done a proper in-person exam since my GCSE.
That's so crazy.
It is. I finished my degree just in my bedroom. Same way it started, just in my bedroom on my laptop.
Wow.
Yeah. But I don't mind it. I would cause a fuss if they made us do in-person exams.
I find benefits and drawbacks of both. I find I'm quite good at the whole exam concentration thing. Even if I do worry beforehand, I think I'm quite good at, you know, I get into the exam room and write exam mode, get the thing done.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm fairly all right at that, but I also, you know, the extra hassle of sort of needing to go to the exam place, you know, queue up, wait ages, also like all the extra time that spent like at the end by people collecting up the papers. It's just also computer science exams that are on in person on a computer, right? I was not prepared for this. They seat about 100 people, these rooms. And I think the ones that were in person on the computer last semester were kind of a lot of multiple choice stuff. So it was quite quiet. The one in person that I had this time was so... There's quite a lot of written stuff. So the noise of keyboards.
Tapping.
It wasn't even tip tapping. No. It was like being in a rainstorm. It was so loud for the exam lasts for about, I think it was an hour and a half. I was only really in there for an hour, but it's like a hailstorm. It's like you can't express how loud it is.
So annoyed with everyone around me that I wouldn't have been able to concentrate at all.
Nothing prepares for you. Nothing prepares you for it, except doing it, and it's an experience and a half, certainly.
Yeah. Fair enough. I've got a question for you that I ask everybody. One of those ones. Got to get to them eventually.
Of course.
And I realise we've done half an hour without me asking any of them, and normally I've asked them by now. So, I want to start with, if you were going on a quiz show of some variety and you had to pick a specialist subject, what would that specialist subject be? As I like to say, this can't be a boring one. You can't pick something obvious. I don't want any computer science answers.
Nothing computer. That's tricky because I have been thinking over the past several months when I've been listening to all these episodes. I think, what would I do? And naturally, I do a few things around the station, so I can't really pick anything news related or anything music related or anything computer science related.
I mean, I'll allow it if it's very specific.
I mean,
but it can't be. I know I say it can't be boring, and I don't mean that in like a...
Like boring, obvious. Yeah. If I'm confining myself to those things I've just said, I think anything that isn't that, I think probably something TV related. I quite like something like Breaking Bad or like Arrow. I quite liked something like that. Not really something, and then maybe if it, like going really really niche, probably something like Scientology.
Okay.
I read quite a bit into that kind of weird offbeat things, like the weird facts.
Scientology is quite a fun answer.
Yeah.
No one said anything like that.
But
before,
in terms of, you know, if it was something hyper specific music wise, it would probably just be the music of band I like.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of music listener that if I kind of start to like a band, I will properly dig through their entire discography. I'll read everything into them. I'll, you know, read the lyrics, everything. I like to obsess, and then once I finish that, I'll move on to something else.
Yeah. If you had to pick a band right now, which one would you pick?
Right now, I would probably pick something like Radiohead.
Okay.
Something like that. But I remember watching Mastermind once before, where someone picked the music of Crowded House, and who I adore, and I managed to get like all of those questions right. So in terms of something that I know I could do quite well on Mastermind,
yeah,
I was able to like answer probably, I think I was able to answer the questions better than the person that was doing them. So something music-y like that. But yeah, I spent quite a while, like I've spent months and months trying to work out what my answer to that question was going to be. So I hope that's somewhat sufficient.
No, that's a good one. You got a few good options. I am taking Scientology because I think that's a really interesting and fun one. I'm assigning you, that's what we're going.
Thank
with.
You.
Out of the ones you gave me, I think that'd be quite interesting.
I'm happy with that, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, they have like the pieces of media that they've consumed a lot of. So like, yeah. Want that or music or whatever. But yeah. No one's ever said anything religion based, so
yeah. I back in year 9 I watched the Louis Theroux documentary, yes. About it, and I was kind of, I don't know, I was just browsing iPlayer one night, saw it, and I was like, oh, this seems interesting. I was hooked. I was hooked by that documentary. I was like, wow, these guys are interesting. And I then like started to read a lot more into it. I read like quite a lot of not like books published by the church, but for any concerned listeners out there, I never at one point considered converting to being a Scientologist. I bought quite a few books about like from ex-Scientologists, and people have written about it, watched a few documentaries and things like that, and yeah. I've always been fascinated by the offbeat and things like that, which is why kind of the Louis Theroux stuff really I don't know, draws me in.
Yeah, yeah.
weird little things like that.
As I say, that's why I think it's a good one, because it's rogue compared to, you know, what I normally get people saying. Quite interesting. You got me thinking of Louis Theroux now.
I love that man.
Are
so
you a big
much.
Fan?
I've watched all. Like, I think I've watched. I don't think I've. I'm quite ashamed to say I haven't watched Weird Weekends, because that was obviously quite before my time, by a couple of years.
Yeah.
And I was always a big fan of like I think the first one I ever watched was probably the Scientology one. And then I watched all of the other ones about like, you know, prisons and gambling and like plastic surgery and mental health and drugs. And
He's done a lot, hasn't he?
He's covered every single base. I really, really, really like him. I really like his style. I really like... I also the stuff that he's done with Westboro Baptist Church and stuff, and things like that. And he kind of really, for a good while, provided me sort of an in to like learning about all of these weird subcultures. And I just have so much respect for the guy for kind of being able to almost let, you know, having his like disarming presence, such a disarming presence that allows sort of interviewees to, you know, dig their own holes.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to the more concerning offbeat people that he interviews.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that stuff, and especially as someone that does news and sort of journalism and stuff, I find him quite a big inspiration on that front.
Is journalism something you're interested in?
It's certainly something I'm very interested in, and I've always been interested in, you know, kind of, I occasionally on Twitter kind of delve into, you know, media commentary type start things of like, you know, is this news article, you know, how a news article is written, how, you know, news is run and done, and the ethics of inviting, you know, controversial figures and interviewing them, you know, giving them a platform versus challenging them, mm-hmm. you know, which is it? So that, and I find that kind of stuff really interesting, and also kind of, you know, the big, like, I'm always inspired by the big investigative pieces that BBC put out.
Yeah.
Because every, you know, I get fed up with them occasionally, but every once in a while they put out really long articles on really interesting investigations, and I'm just hooked. As you know, as a career path, it's one of those things that I don't think I'm enough into it to properly say that it's what I want to do. It's one of those things that you really need to dedicate.
You need
yourself
to love it, yeah.
And I don't think I have that, you know. But that being said, you know, if the BBC phoned me up and were like, "Hey, wanna be a broadcast journalist with us?" I'd of course say yes.
Yeah,
you know, I'd love to do it, but it's not something that is particularly at the forefront of my mind when it comes to making careers decisions.
Yeah. Would you say that what's the word? Computer science is more your shtick there.
I guess it's weird because I've gone through endless phases of wanting to do all sorts of stuff as a kid. You know, I think I originally, you know, used to want to be like a train driver or like a digger driver or something like that. And then
My
I had
favorite.
Or an engineer.
Yeah.
And then there was a brief time in my sort of early mid-teens I wanted to go into acting, because I did a lot of acting when I was younger, a lot of theatre stuff. And there's a, you know, there's part of me that also wants to, would love to be in a, you know, be a musician, be in a successful band, playing, you know, bass or another instrument or something. But and then I was kind of, for a good few years, I was quite almost like as if I'd made my mind up. Like, especially in sixth form, I was like, I want to do, you know, I want to do computer science, I want to do like cyber security and network security. And I went to university and I joined radio. And then, that sort of changed. I kind of want to do, probably this current stage, you know, broadcast engineering, something like the, you know, something akin to the tech stuff I do around here, I guess. Mm. I don't think I'd want to be a music presenter.
No.
I think because I'm obsessed with playing music in a band so much that if I was a music presenter, I would just end up feel like I'm doing a less cool job.
I see.
And
that.
I would be, you know, I'd be spending my time playing artists and interviewing artists, which is really, really cool. But realistically, I would just rather be in their position.
Yeah.
And therefore, music presenting doesn't really appeal that much to me. In that sense, you know, that's why I'm kind of happy to keep it as a little side project, as I was sort of referring to earlier on. But yeah, as I say, I go through various phases. It's still not particularly concrete, but I've sort of been wanting to. I think it's been a good 6 months that I've kind of been like, this broadcast engineering thing seems quite interesting.
Yeah, fair enough. It's quite nice to talk to, like, to hear the perspective of someone who isn't, you know, the priority isn't like them talking, if that makes sense. Because radio is all just us talking, yeah. So we all like the sounds of our own voices. But there are other parts of it, and it's crazy to say this, but sometimes some of us don't want to talk.
Well, that's crazy. That's always been the weird thing for me, because like I really do like doing the talking. I really do like doing the speaking, presenting. And I also really like doing behind the scenes stuff. I really like producing. I really like, you know, doing the tech stuff. I like doing, you know, audio production. I love like editing idents together and doing big like projects like that. And you know, because they're all rewarding in different ways. And one reason I really love university radio is because I can do all of those things. And I'm kind of the idea, and for a while the idea of going into broadcasting at all in my first few months at URN kind of seemed off limits to me, because I quite like doing all of the things. Yeah. And I know that as soon as I get into the real world, you can't do that anymore. Like if I'm a host, if I'm like some music host, tech team won't want me anywhere near them. They want to get on with their job, you know, they want to get on with their job and make the station, you know, work properly. They don't need some, you know, some random presenter coming and asking what they're doing and like,
yeah,
say, and offering advice and stuff like that. And also there was also a time that I was like, do I really want to do broadcast engineering? What happens if I, you know, get that job? Because I feel once, as soon as I do that, I'll be confined to being a behind the scenes guy. And I kind of quite like being in the scenes. So it's a bit of a juggling act, really. I like everything, but I feel like tech is the one that, it, you know, currently it fits on in most of my degree. It's what I'm best at. It's what I've been doing for probably the longest. And it needs to be done. There's always going to be, you know, the need for someone techie, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed. So it's a whole combination of things that sort of make me want to do that thing specifically. But I think I'll always, even post university radio, I'll still maintain my love for the spoken side of things like that.
Yeah. That's quite nice. What would you say is your most iconic item of clothing?
That's interesting. So, for first semester, I was kind of, a lot of people knew me for my long coat. I've got a long black coat, which I kind of then, after Christmas, sort of retired for a bit. It's been making the occasional appearance in the
because
past few
weeks.
Because
of the temperature or just
well,
different style?
Realistically, in December, I shouldn't have been wearing it. I should have been wearing a winter coat, but I didn't have one, so...
Okay.
I got myself like a really bad cold in the last week of December because I wasn't like wrapping myself enough warm. And then I got a new coat after Christmas, so I decided to wear that instead. I'm going to change things up a bit. Also, I had quite long hair, and the long coat sort of added to my self-perceived scruffiness, which I wasn't particularly comfortable with. So I kind of wanted to just change things up. So I think that definitely was probably one of my more iconic things of clothing. Currently, I'm in my summer dress code, so which is basically I'm oscillating between sort of dressing like my dad in summer, so sort of, you know, mid-40s kind of outdoorsy guy, you know, with the shorts and kind of t-shirts that have been bought from outdoor shops.
Yeah.
But more abstractly, I'd say the clothing that's most associated with me is anything navy.
Okay.
I own so many like navy. I say this. I'm not actually wearing. And I've got a navy hoodie outside, but I'm not wearing anything navy currently.
You got navy on your shirt.
That's true. I've got a bit there, so I can still. I can still say it right. That's thank you. I'm saved there.
Sadly, the listeners can't see, so could have just lied and said it was navy.
You just like open my wardrobe, and aside from like the odd black t-shirt and the odd like weird item of clothing, just not so much navy. And like in sixth form, I like my dress code, like the dress code, I was pretty much navy suits full stop. So navy has been like my color for a good while. And it's like, or just any shade of blue really. There's sometimes that I'm like wearing like light blue trousers and then like a navy t-shirt and then like an even like other like combination of blue on my jacket.
It was just 50 shades of blue.
Yeah, so if you see me, like, if you see someone, like, in navy, like, running about campus or something, maybe with a long coat, that's probably going to be me. Yeah. Also, like, in terms of being spotted around campus, I have a bit of a funny walk, so that kind of gives it away as well. Yeah.
How would you describe your walk?
Funny.
Just funny.
It used to probably be more penguin like. I'm flat footed, so okay. my feet go outwards a bit, and yeah. The trick is just don't run, and you'll look less weird when you're running and sort of got flat feet. It looks a bit weird, in my experience anyway. Or just don't take any notice of it. That's my top mark tips for those blessed with the curse of flat-footedness, I guess. But, just funny, really. I remember my dad sort of making fun of it, like, jokingly talking about, like, the song, was it, like, Walk Like an Egyptian or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just funny, weird, bit goofy.
Bit goofy.
Yeah. Nice. Not too dissimilar from myself.
Yeah, just kind of maybe an extension of your personality.
My personality, yes. Yeah. Well, outward looking. Am I outward looking? I don't know.
That's a question for yourself, which I guess is more of an inward looking question.
Yeah, I know. It's quite funny. I think I'm very obsessed with memory, and past and what and like and analyzing my own like past and trying to work out, you know, how things have like influenced me and stuff like that and how I've changed and stuff like that, which I guess I promise I'm not that self-obsessed, but I just find it fascinating. I feel like I've been a lot of people in my time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that know me can testify I've got a scary good memory at remembering dates and when stuff happens. You know, I can remember all the dates and places of every gig that I've ever been to and stuff that random times things happened.
Yeah.
And it can, and people get occasionally worried by it. So I'm sort of quite obsessed with memory and stuff like that. Which is kind of makes me quite inward looking, I guess. Random B road.
Well, I mean, this question that does require a little bit of memory. What's your proudest achievement up to date?
Ah, right. So there's a few. You know, there's the Joe Cancer, which is my 2019 was it 2018 primary school fair fastest lap on the Scalextric track trophy, which is plastic, but you know, I was quite pleased that I was a child at the time, but I won the adults cup, you know, I won it overall, so I was quite pleased with just being able to, you know, navigate a Scalextric car around the track fast enough. I think university, I haven't really I think academically my A level in maths remains quite my proudest achievement. I was never, whilst I was kind of good at maths, I was never the particularly great at it. And I had to put a lot of effort to get my A in A level maths, and I put a lot of work in over a lot of time. There was a lot of like scares over, you know, what happens if I don't get my A in maths type thing. And I was, you know, I managed to pull that off quite comfortably, thankfully, and I kind of still remain quite proud of that because of the work that I put in, and the fact that it paid off. So I'm very pleased with that. I guess radio wise, my first ever news report, and my only ever news report actually for news properly, back in November, myself and Izzy Morris did a report on a vigil held for Trans Day of Remembrance, which was on 20th of November, and I kind of talked to the organisers and attendees, and I was both attending there on a personal basis, but also on a reporting basis, capacity even, not basis, and I put together a report on that, and I think I was very pleased with what I did there, and because it was an issue that I care a lot about, so probably one of those things. Probably, I know that's not one answer, so I apologise.
I don't mind if it's not just one, because there are a lot of things to be proud of, and it's good to be proud of a lot of things.
Yeah, it's weird. I've never been able to. I think I've done cool stuff in my time, but there's not really many things that do stick out to me much, which is odd. But I'm just like, yeah, I'm happy with that. That's a cool thing that I did.
That's a cool thing.
That's probably my main justifications between those choices.
Maybe that's the best way to think of it, is what's the coolest thing I've done?
Yeah, probably, you know, because I could say, like, getting hugged by one of my favourite musicians is a problem. But, you know, what have I done to that? I've turned up to a gig, I guess. Whereas, yeah, something that I put effort into, I'm kind of quite pleased with those. And I think they're the ones that over time remain to be a thing that I've quite liked, you know, because I think there's plenty of stuff that someone can do that's, you know, quite like in the moment, but then a few weeks pass and they kind of think about it, a few months pass. Whereas these kind of things are remained for a good while now, so I'd probably say concrete. Those are my picks.
Those are ones. Nice. They're good. A good kind of, what's the word? Overview almost. You got a few different like topics. It's not like all your achievements are academic or all your achievements are all that. It seems like you've got a nice mix of things that you're proud of doing.
That's kind of something at best. I realised weirdly quite late on in secondary school and sixth form that I could never really to do cool stuff is not just about academics, it's about, you know, the further, so that's why I like doing school radio and doing various other bits and bobs. Oh, another proud thing, I guess, in sixth form I helped lead a group of students and we put together training material and training sessions for members of staff about queer inclusivity and language in classrooms and stuff like that, and I think we presented it to about one month turnaround between like starting and getting all of this material finished, and then I think over my time in year 13 I think we presented to like 70 different members of staff, senior leadership, governors, and they all really liked it, and I was really proud of that. So that was like another kind of thing that's exterior to academics that I quite enjoy, but university in particular is so tricky. There's so much stuff and there's so many and my cohort is about 380 people that do computer science in my year. There's a lot of really bright, intelligent people, and I kind of realised quite early on, which is one of the reasons I do so much radio and other stuff, is that to set yourself apart relying purely on academics isn't something. Some people can do it, and I mean, I salute them because I certainly couldn't do it, and absolutely, like, crazy talented people, but I don't have the capacity to do that. So I kind of get my the thing that boosts me up is just trying to do as much weird stuff as possible, as much like, you know, the odd sound mixing for musicality or the odd like weird off like radio show. It's just little things to add here and there to kind of bring myself a bit of enjoyment and to kind of, I don't know, spice up my time at university outside of just, I'm not one that can just sit down at a computer for 12 hours and slog away at coursework until I get 100%. As I said, some can, but that's not me.
No, that's not my attitude towards it either at all. All right. I will ask you the last question so we can leave it on a good note. Not that it hasn't been a good note, but, you know, I like to end on a nice positive note. What is it you're looking forward to?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I'm looking forward to, I mean, there's gigs this summer that I'm looking forward to, but I think specifically what I'm looking forward to next year is doing more tech stuff around the station here.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we're getting renovated and there'll be some new equipment buying involved in that. I'm looking forward to being able to help put together a new cool studio for everyone in the station to benefit from. Whether or not that's revitalized podcasting or a nice office space, better provisions for audio production, music space for like getting live acts in and better interviews and on-camera interviews and stuff like that. So definitely kind of mostly behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm looking forward to doing some cool investigative pieces with news. I'd really like to do some of those. I wanted to do something this year, but it kind of, the time didn't really work with it. So I'm certainly looking forward to find the scenes of that. I've sort of got this fantasy I've been talking about recently of sort of coming into the station one day and, you know, during renovation time and there being like a, I don't know, like a pallet full of new tech stuff to finally install, and like nothing excites me more than that. So that image is in my head, and it's probably not going to come true because obviously you don't get, you know, things don't arrive at the same time, but you know, that image is what's keeping me going really. So those are certainly what I'm looking forward to, and just continuing my time at radio, because you know, it's only been a year, it's gone quickly, but I've still got another 2 years
to go.
And I just, you know, I can't wait to see where it goes from here. And hopefully,
it's very exciting.
You know, do more and get more opportunities to do crazy, random, weird stuff like that. So, yeah, that's about it.
It's very nice. Very radio excited future.
Thank you very much. I'm very radio excited for me.
Lovely. Well, thank you for being on the podcast today, Mark.
Thank you very much for inviting me on.
And enjoy your radio career here, I guess. It's weird now doing these as I'm like, I've finished my degree. I'm just waiting to graduate now. And then talking to people who it's like, oh, I've got all these exciting things.
I think I'm the second first year to be interviewed on this. Rachel was before me.
I'm trying to think if I interviewed anyone else. Don't know.
I'm the young'un. But yeah,
I think I might be.
I'm radio excited to see what the world of cool podcasts and other radio holds for you, Erin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And if you've enjoyed listening to my voice, make sure you check out our Instagram, Off Air on Your End, to stay up to date with all the episodes coming out soon.